Okay. Today is Wednesday, October 3rd. Yankee wild card game tonight. This is the women's Mishnah Gemara share. We'll eventually find out. The plan is to learn Sugyot and Sukkah.
Okay, Rabotai. Before we move on, first I want to welcome everybody back and welcome some new faces as well. I'd like to just get some of your input before we start as to how the shiur will proceed. You know, it used to be basically a Mishnah shiur, where we did a Mishnayos. But if you've been here the last year or two, we rarely looked at a Mishnah. Yeah, we might have looked at a Mishnah, but the majority of the class is focused on something in the Gemara that tried to develop a principle that is the underlying principle of the Mishnah. Mishnayot are very, very short. They rarely give you defining principles. The Gemara is full of that, with so many debates and things that might be brought in from other sources. That's the way it's been the last at least two, 3 years. So what I wrote on the email was, this is a Gemara share. It's not really a Mishnah share anymore, because a Mishnah share doesn't, when you teach Mishnah, you just try to focus on what the Mishnah says. Obviously you try to enhance it by sharing with you some of the material in the Gemara, but the objective in doing a Mishnah class is to cover, you know, a broad spectrum, a lot of ground, to try to finish a whole Masechta of Mishnayos or something of that nature. So what do you want, what are you looking to get out of the shiur? To somehow maintain the pattern of the last 2-3 years, where we will look at a Mishnah. We're going to start with a Mishnah today. And what I was thinking of doing is simply identifying a topic, not necessarily going in order, but an issue that is developed, that principle can be seen in other locations, and so on and so forth. So I'll give you an example of what happens tonight, and then we'll stop and just, you'll reflect, and I'll let you think about it the whole, you know, next couple of days. If you'll send me information, just email me, and I'll be guided by it, and I'm willing to make a change for next week if there is, you know, particular interest. So here tonight, we're going to, the topic for tonight is, there should be, the topic for tonight is to identify how powerful are the Rabbanan, in that even if something is fully acceptable on a d'oraita level, if the rabbis have concern about any particular issue, they have a right to suspend your fulfillment of a mitzvah, even though according to Torah law you're doing absolutely nothing wrong. You're fulfilling exactly what the Torah tells us, but there is a rabbinic issue on hand, and once the halakha will be formulated in accordance with a particular position, that position is so powerful that it will negate the fulfillment of a biblical mitzvah which has absolutely nothing wrong with it. That's the topic for tonight. So we'll see as we proceed. And then, like I said, you'll send me your comments and we'll try to come to a consensus. So this Mishnah happens to be in Masechta Sukkah, where the Mishnah makes the following statement. It's in the second perek of Masechet Sukkah. Ha'oseh sukkato berosh ha'agala o berosh ha'svina. If somebody builds a sukkah on a carriage, a horse-driven carriage, that's agala. O berosh ha'svina, on the deck of a ship. Ksheira, the sukkah is acceptable. Va'olin la biyomtov, and you are allowed to get on that particular ship that particular sukkah on Yom Tov. Despite the fact that the ship is moving, despite the fact that the wagon is, again, moving, the fact that a sukkah is moving does not create a problem with your sukkah. So, on a wagon, it's hard to imagine making a sukkah on a wagon, but on a boat, it's not beyond our imagination. Somebody's taking a trip. At that time, trips took a long time. If you went sometime over sukkahs, I could hear that somebody would want to build a sukkah on a boat, and the Mishnah says it's acceptable, and you can go on that boat on Yom Tov. We're not going to talk about that case at all. The next case is what we're going to talk about. Berosh ha'ilan o al gabe gamal. If somebody built a sukkah on the top of a tree, again, it's a little hard for me to imagine, but next time you're in Israel, go to, I forgot the name of the place, what? Yes, Neot Kedumim, where they have models of every single sukkah that the Mishnah talks about. And they will show you a sukkah that is constructed on top of a tree, or a sukkah that has been constructed on the top of a camel. So the Mishnah says, Ksheira ve'ein olin la b'yom tov. The sukkah itself is kosher, but on Yom Tov, or Shabbat for that matter, you are not permitted to ascend onto that sukkah. Why not? Because there is a rabbinic prohibition against climbing any tree on Shabbat or Yom Tov. What might be the reason for the rabbinic? Yes? You're afraid you're going to pull a branch down. Looks good. So therefore you're not allowed to climb a tree. Why are you not permitted to ride an animal on Yom Tov or Shabbos? But no, I can't think of an Easter of hitting an animal with a stick. Exactly. You're traveling and there is a branch hanging down interfering with your route, so you might decide to pull it down, and once you pull a branch off, you violate the prohibition of kotzer, severing something from its natural growth. That is one of the 39 principles of Milachot on Shabbat and on Yom Tov as well. Fine. But the Mishnah says that the sukkah itself is Kshera. So on the first day of Yom Tov, you can't use this sukkah, but on Chol HaMoed, you're allowed to use it. And Shabbat Chol HaMoed, you can't use it. However, on non-Shabbat Chol HaMoed, any other day Chol HaMoed, this sukkah is 100% kosher. Yes?
Could you go up Friday afternoon and then sleep in the sukkah, in the treehouse?
No.
It's not just the climbing.
That is correct. Because they're afraid that for some reason or another you're going to want to come down. And once you want to come down, the same concern is there's a branch in your way or whatever it is. One is not permitted to be on a tree or an animal on Yom Tov or Shabbos. Fine. That's what the Mishnah says. Now, the Gemara then is going to tell us, if you go now, the pages are numbered based on Yankees. I hope you noticed that. 40 is Severino starting tonight, and 27 is Stanton, and 99 is Judge. So there's no Hesach Hadass from the Yankees. That's all. We don't have to, that's all. Yeah. So, now, look at the, I bracketed, it's actually the next line, after I bracketed it. O al gabe gamal. The Gemara is going to comment on that which we read in the Mishnah, that you are permitted to make a sukkah on a camel, but you cannot use that sukkah on Yom Tov. Al gabe gamal, says the Gemara. Masnitin mani. Who is the author of this Mishnah? Who is the author of this Mishnah? The Gemara knows, and it's going to tell us in a second, the Gemara knows that there is someone who would disagree with our Mishnah. We'll see why in a minute. There is someone who is going to disagree. So the Gemara is now looking to establish who is the author of the Mishnah that would accept the ruling of the Mishnah, that the sukkah itself is kasher, but you're only not permitted to use it on Yom Tov or Shabbat. Masnitin Mani. Who is the author of our Mishnah? There are hundreds of Tanaim, and many of them could have been the author of the Mishnah. And the Gemara here assumes its first guess is Rabbi Meir, because Rabbi Meir said something that's relevant to this, and the Mishnah itself was not cited by any name. It didn't say Rabbi Yehuda says this, Rabbi Meir says this. So a Mishnah that records no name in it is called a Stam Mishnah. Samach Tov Mem. Stam Mishnah. And we believe that the author of every Stam Mishnah was Rabbi Meir. He formulated all of the Mishnayot that do not record the position of who is saying it. Many Mishnayot, they tell you, Divrei Rabbi Yehuda, Divrei Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Hoshua, Rabbi Tarfon, and so on and so forth. Hillel and Shammai. Those are not Stam Mishnayot. But if you have a Mishnah that records a din without a name either being recorded before or after, such a Mishnah is called a Stam Mishnah. A Stam Mishnah. And that Mishnah, which we just read, did not quote any person. So the Gemara is going to guess, and suppose, not a guess, it's an educated guess, that the author is Rabbi Meir. Which Rabbi Meir? Disanya, we learned in a Braita. A Braita is a statement that is made by some Tana during the Tanaitic era from the year 1 until the year 200. But for some reason, Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, the editor of the Mishnah, did not include it in the Mishnayot. So we have, besides our Mishnah, we have several editions of Braita. And they're printed in the back of most Gemaras, called the Tosefta. So they're just as valid as a Mishnah, but for some reason or another, Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi did not include it. And the mere fact that the Braita is going to quote a machloket, and Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, the editor, didn't include in the Mishnah, it shows what his feeling was. He believed that the halacha was in accordance with one of the two people, happens to be Rabbi Meir, and that's why he didn't even bother quoting the other opinion. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Meir, the sanya we learned in a Braita, ha'ose sukato al gabe behema, if somebody makes his sukkah on the top of an animal, Rabbi Meir machshir v'Rabbi Yehuda posel. Rabbi Meir says the sukkah is kosher, and Rabbi Yehuda says it's disqualified. It cannot be used for Sukkot, not only not on Shabbat and Yom Tov, but even on a regular day of Chol HaMoed, you cannot fulfill your obligation with this type of sukkah. Says the Gemara, Mai ta'ama de Rabbi Yehuda. What is the reason for Rabbi Yehuda's position? Rabbi Meir needs no explanation. Why does Rabbi Meir's opinion need no explanation? Why does Rabbi Meir's opinion need no explanation? Because it has guidelines which we know of. What would be terrible about making a sukkah on an animal? I can't think of anything. As to why Rabbi Meir said you can't go into it on Shabbos, that's a halacha which every person who studied Masechta Shabbos knows very well. An animal is muktzah. And you can't move it, nor are you allowed to climb on it. That's a well-known halakha. So Rabbi Meir's position doesn't require much analysis, because there is no reason under the sun for us to disqualify the sukkah. The only thing we know of, that on Shabbos and Yom Tov, you're not allowed to climb on an animal. So going in the sukkah on top of an animal is climbing on the animal. Yes?
Well, maybe there's an idea that if the animal dies, and then is the sukkah okay? I mean,
no. If the animal dies, your sukkah is going to collapse. We're not worried about that. If the animal dies, and the sukkah stayed intact, so you want to know, can you go on an animal if it dies? That's a good question. It's a good question. Probably not. Probably not. But I don't know. I would assume. But that's not the reason.
A sukkah on the ground wouldn't be kosher because what if a storm comes
around? Yeah, well. So, yeah. Question. Yeah.
Maybe the problem is that if you make a sukkah on an animal and you can't use it, somebody, what's the point of making it if you can't
use it? Right, so he was invited to your house for the first day. Now, Kolomoid, he needs a sukkah in his own backyard, and he's got it, he built it on the... you've learned enough to know that we don't really care about the practicality of a lot of these debates. They're here to teach us principles. Again, most people that I know of would not build a sukkah on an animal.
Presumably,
well, it doesn't say. There are minimal dimensions. That is correct. There are minimal dimensions.
The camel thing is sort of understandable. It's the same as the ship.
What?
If you're on a...
No, there's no issa to be on a ship on Shabbos.
Yeah, you can go from one place to another.
But that's why it makes sense that you could do it on a camel. It makes sense that people would do it
the way. If you're on a caravan.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. But again, even on a camel that's got a wide back, it's hard to imagine building a sukkah on it. That's all I'm saying. I can't, it's hard to see the reality. But that doesn't bother the Gemara at all. So the Gemara asks, "Mai ta'ama de Rabbi Yehuda?" Answers the Gemara. Amar Kra, the Pasuk states, Chag hasukot ta'ase lecha shivat yamim. You shall make the Yom Tov of Sukkot for 7 days. Here comes the drash. Sukkah hare'uya l'shiva shma sukkah. Sukkah she'ena re'uya l'shiva lo shma sukkah. Says Rabbi Yehuda. Since it says Chag HaSukkot Ta'aseh Lecha Shiv'at Yamim, you always need a sukkah that is theoretically usable for 7 days for the Shiv'at HaYamim. And so now finish up why Rabbi Yehuda thinks this sukkah is not good. Because you can't use it on Shabbos or on Yom Tov. So if the first day of Sukkot is Shabbat, it's only available for 6 days. If the first day of Sukkot is not Shabbat, your sukkah is only available for 5 days. And in order to have a kosher sukkah, claims Rabbi Yehuda, the sukkah has to be feasible, available for use for all 7 days. And if it is not available for 7 days, under those circumstances, the sukkah is disqualified.
So he takes Chag HaSukkot to mean sukkah. I mean, the Pasuk says that the Chag has to be for 7 days.
Correct.
The sukkah has to be.
That's his drash, of course. The Pasuk is not talking about building a sukkah.
That's right.
The Pasuk is talking about the festival of Sukkot shall last for 7 days. Chag HaSukkot ta'aseh lecha shivat yamim. But he darshans that the Pasuk is talking about not only that the festival is 7 days long, but that the sukkah in which we eat during Sukkot has to be feasible and available for 7 days. Now, why is this sukkah not available for 7 days? Who said that you can't use it? Only the Rabbanan. According to Torah law, you're allowed to climb on an animal. According to Torah law, you're allowed to climb a tree. All those prohibitions are rabbinic in nature. Are rabbinic. So here we have illustration number one for tonight, where according to Torah law, there is absolutely nothing wrong with this sukkah, because it is feasible for 7 days. Why not? However, the rabbis put limitations on it, and it's only available for 5 days. So my question will be, what happens if I didn't listen to the rabbis and I ate in my sukkah all 7 days that I was sitting on this camel? What would be the expected decision of that? What will happen upstairs with me? What happened? I will have fulfilled the mitzvah of sukkah and violated an issa d'rabbanan. That's the way normally we would think, because that's what happened. According to Torah law, I did nothing wrong. According to the Rabbanan, I did something wrong. Okay, so punish me for doing something that the Rabbanan don't like. There are no punishments associated with violating rabbinic law. So I did it.
So that's the same thing as like stealing and giving tzedakah. Because you did the mitzvah of giving tzedakah, but you stole to do it. So you're doing the mitzvah of...
Okay. So no, it's a good question. That's right. But, right. Here, the answer simply to your question is that you do not fulfill the mitzvah of tzedakah when you steal, because it's what we call mitzvah haba'a ba'aveira. The only way for you to get this money to give to tzedakah was stealing. So that disqualifies the mitzvah. Here, this is not a mitzvah baba
vera. That's correct.
Therein is the difference. So far, the Gemara didn't say that you don't fulfill the mitzvah if you violated rabbinic law. We're going to see who does say that in a couple of seconds. So therefore, our Mishnah, which just made a blanket rule and said that the sukkah is kosher, must be Rabbi Meir. Because Rabbi Meir does not make that rush. He does not believe that a sukkah has to be suitable for 7 days. He does not believe that a sukkah has to be available for 7 days. And therefore the Mishnah is patterned after Rabbi Meir's opinion, ignoring Rabbi Yehuda's opinion. Yes?
Is the Rabbanan considered... You said it was according to Rabbanan.
According to Rabbanan, yeah.
So is that Rabbi Yehuda would be considered the Rabbanan?
No, he's one of the Rabbanan.
Right, so yeah. I'm asking...
But it doesn't mean... I mean the Rabbanan in general, who legislated, whoever that body was...
Seeing that's what I'm asking. Where's the source that you're pointing to that study?
It's a Gemara in Shabbos that says you're not allowed to climb on an animal. Whoever those Rabbanan are, who created the Isur Midrabbanan. It's not referring to Rabbi Yehuda per se. That's correct. Now, there is another famous drash from this Pasuk, Chagasukot, that is Rabbi Eliezer in a different Mishnah, who says, if you didn't build your sukkah before Yom Tov, you can't build one on Chol HaMoed. Why not? Tell me, he uses the same pasuk. Because it says, Chaga suko ta'aseh lecha shivat yamim. You have to have your sukkah up for 7 days. So if you didn't build a sukkah for yourself, and then that's just too bad. And Rabbi Eliezer, if you want to complicate him personally, he says the sukkah has to be yours. You can never eat in a borrowed sukkah. No invitations for the Yontov of Sukkot, according to Rabbi Eliezer. You have to eat in your house, in your sukkah, because it says, Lecha, Lecha, like we rule by Etrog, Lachem. We disagree with Rabbi Eliezer, but that's what he said. So there's a lot happening with this simple, innocent phrase, which has nothing to do with a sukkah, but lots of people are reading into it, laws about Sukkot, even though the Pasuk's not talking about a sukkah, as you pointed out. as you pointed out. Fine. So now, move on for a second to a second case, and then I'm going to show you Tosafot that establishes a position concerning these type of issues. Turn to page 99, and this is another Mishnah in the second parak of Masechet Sukkah, Daf Chav Chet Amud Aleph. So I'm doing this because Elki wants to learn Mishnah. So I got the report. That's all. Mi shahaya rosho virubo basuka vishulchano b'toch habayit. Somebody built a sukkah right next door to his house.
On the mirpeset.
On the mirpeset, yes. Exactly. And he is sitting in the sukkah, but his table extends into the house. The table is next to him in the sukkah, and part of the sukkah is b'toch habayit. Says the Mishnah, Beit Shammai poslin, u Beit Hillel machshirin. Beit Shammai says the sukkah is pasul.
Wait, just the table is?
Just the table is partially in the house.
Why would that be a problem? You're sitting at the end that's in the sukkah.
I know. Well, we're going to see. Hold on. We'll see. So Shammai says the sukkah is disqualified. Posel. Ubeit Hillel machshirin. Amar lohem Beit Hillel Beit Shammai, said the students of Hillel to the students of Shammai. Lo kach haya ma'aseh, wasn't there an episode that seems to support my opinion, our opinion? What was that episode? Shaholchu ziknei Beit Shammai v'ziknei Beit Hillel livaker et Rab Yochanan ben Hachoranit. The students of Shammai and the students of Hillel went to visit Rab Yochanan, the son of Choranit. Umatzuhu, and they found him, Shahaya Yoshev Rosho Virubo Bispasuka Vishulchano Bitochabait. And part of his table was extending into the house. Velo amru lo davar, and they didn't seem to say anything to him. So, if he was sitting there, how could you imagine that Rabbi Yochanan ben Hachoranit would sit in the sukkah, which is what? Is disqualified. So you guys, Shammai, you guys must be wrong. Amru lohem Beit Shammai, misham raya? You're trying to bring a proof from this Rabbi Yochanan? Af heim omrulo. They actually said something. My students, Shammai said, told him off. What did they say? Im kein hayita noheg. If you have been conducting yourself like this your whole life, lo kiyamta mitzvat sukkah miyomecha. You have never fulfilled the mitzvah of sukkah your entire life. Why? Because we believe this sukkah is disqualified. Now, the Mishnah doesn't tell us why Shammai disqualified the sukkah. And you, by your reaction, you didn't think there was be any reason to. He's in the sukkah, the portion of his table is in the sukkah. What's the problem? The problem is maybe he's a fresser. A fresser. No, and there is something on the other side of the table that is not getting past quickly enough for him. So instead of waiting patiently for the cholent to come down to this side of the table where he is seated in the sukkah, he's going to go over to the other side of the table to get some cholent,
Now, let's not use chols, because chols you can actually eat out of the sukkah, but it's lakshin kogel, made out of noodles. Grain has to be eaten in the sukkah, and he'll come to the side, and he'll put some lakshin kogel in his mouth while he's in the house, and not in the sukkah. So Shammai's concern is Shema Yimashech Achar Shulchano. He will be dragged into the house by virtue of the fact that the food, the good food, is sitting on that side of the table. They only had potato kugel on this side. He wanted lakshin kugel. So he went. So therefore Shammai says, I disqualify the entire sukkah because of this concern. Yes.
Now, I don't know where this comes from, but I know there are people who, they don't have, like, the whole sukkah is not exactly kosher. Let's say the schach doesn't cover it, all of it. So they have the table, and they say, okay, so the women, you sit over there, and so that would be the same case. It should be, right? Okay. The whole thing should be possible. It's the same thing that should go across.
That's correct. That you might come across a source that would say it's a very good case, where part of the sukkah is kosher and part of it is not. That I would imagine, correct. But we don't say that. We have to see why. But it's a good. It's a very good analogy. So Shammai told them, listen, Rabbi Yochanan, if this is what you do all the time, you're not going to be mekayim the mitzvah. Now, you all know that whenever Hillel and Shammai argue, who is the halacha established in accordance with?
Hillel.
So Hillel is not worried about the lakshin kugel that's doing on the other table. However, there are X number of cases in the Talmud where we follow Shammai. So now turn to page number 41. That's Anduar's number, the third baseman. Miggy. So I bracketed the Tosfot for you, and right after the caption, "Da Amar Lecha Mani Beit Shammai Velo Tazuz Mina," says Tosfot, "B'Seder Rav Amram in the Sidur of the order of the davening which Rav Amram composed, Pasak B'Shisha Mikomot Halacha Kibei Shammai." Rav Amram Gaon ruled that in six cases of the Talmud, the halacha should be established like Beit Shammai. Number six seems to be a little funny number, because there is another pair who argue 22,000 times, Abaye and Rava, and the halacha is like always like Rava, except for six times where we paskin like Abaye. It's funny. I don't know if it's just coincidence or not. So this now is, and here he lists it. Chada, the first case is, Hai desuka tzricha shetehe machzeket rosho verubo ve shulchano. The sukkah has to hold him and his table. Can't have the table protruding into the house. And this is the first case where Amram Gaon said the halacha is like Beit Shammai. Now, I ask you the case again, the question. Do you think this is a biblical concern that the table has to be inside the sukkah? Of course not. Why? From a biblical point of view, what is this guy doing? What is Rabbi Yochanan doing? He's sitting in the sukkah and eating. Who comes up with this possibility that he needed the lakshin kugel? He's got no patience and he's going to go there and eat the lakshin. The rabbis, obviously. So now I will pose the question. What happens? Rabbi Yochanan, according to Beit Shammai, said, you know what? You have never fulfilled the mitzvah. What do you mean he's never fulfilled the mitzvah? According to Torah law, he's done nothing wrong whatsoever. So at the end of the Tosafot, At the end of the Tosfot, we're going to read what I bracketed. Kida'ashikachan lebeit Shammai, just as I find, like Beit Shammai, Heichi diyativ apitcha demetalalta. He was sitting at the doorway of the sukkah. The Gazrei, the Shammai, legislated Shema Yimashech Achar Shulchano. Perhaps he will now follow his table. His table's inside, partially inside, partially out. He'll follow it. V'ka'amri, and Shammai said to them, Lo kiyamta mitzvat sukkah miyamecha. You have never fulfilled, if this is what you've been doing all your life, sitting with your table inside, you have never fulfilled it. The afilu midoraita lo kiyem. Afilu midoraita. The rabbis have so much power that right now, if you were to go upstairs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu's record book, Rabbi Yochanan ben HaChoranit will not have gotten credit for eating in the sukkah whatsoever. Even though, according to Torah law, there is nothing wrong with his behavior. It's completely a made-up derabanan din. So I can understand if Tosfot would say, on a derabanan level, you didn't fulfill it, but on a do'oraita level, of course you fulfilled it. Says Tosfos, no. That Shammai believes that his opinion is so potent that you will not fulfill the mitzvah of sukkah even on a do'oraita level. If you don't fulfill the mitzvah of sukkah, not only did you not get credit for the mitzvah, what else happens to Rabbi Yochanan? What else does he violate? What does he violate? So say it. Tell me what he violates. Correct. Eating grain out of the sukkah. Because the sukkah, Beit Shammai didn't say, you're doing something wrong. What did Beit Shammai say? The sukkah is pasul. They disqualified the sukkah. So if the sukkah is disqualified, make believe there is no schach on the sukkah. So if a person eats in a sukkah without any schach, not only do you fail to be mekayim a mitzvah, but you violate an isur of eating out of the sukkah. You don't have to be in the sukkah except for the first night. The first night, you have to eat in the sukkah a kezias of bread. You must eat. The rest of the days of Sukkot, you want to eat grain? Go into the sukkah. You want to eat meat and fish and vegetables and fruits and not have to wash or eat grain? You're allowed to stay out of the sukkah the entire week except for the first night, which we learn out from comparing sukkah to matzah. The only time that you have to eat matzah is at the Seder, the first night. The rest of the Yom Tov, you don't want to eat bread? That's okay. That's fine. If you want to eat bread, it has to be matzah. But if you don't want to eat bread, that's fine. But there is a chiyuv, an absolute obligation on the first night. So too with the Yontov of Sukkos. And in fact, we Ashkenazim believe, thank God we didn't have the problem this year, even if it's pouring cats and dogs on the first night, you're supposed to wait till approximately midnight to see if it'll stop. And if it's not stopping, you put on your boots, your raincoat, that, and you make kiddush, and you eat a kezias of bread in the sukkah. Sephardic authorities say, that's ridiculous, that the exemption from rain is applicable not only the rest of Sukkot, but even the first night. But we Ashkenazim follow the Ramah as always. Yes?
There's nobody earlier than Rav Amram Gaon who talks about these six.
By Shammai and Hillel, nobody talks about it before Amram. By Rava and Abaye, the Gemara itself says that the halacha is like Rava, chutz yal kigam. Six letters, each one represents a different case. Yei shalom idas, eid zon v'men, and so on and so forth. But by Hillel and Shammai, there ain't no discussion.
And that's really late.
It is, of course. It's 9th century. Yeah, it is late. No doubt. No doubt. Yes.
eat grains not in the sukkah, why is it that women aren't obligated?
Because it's a mitzvah saseh shehazman grama. It's no, but those are the guidelines of the mitzvah of sukkah. But the way the Torah formulates it is just a positive statement. Basukot teshvu shivat yamim. Doesn't say you're not allowed to eat out of it. We derive that. But since the essence of the mitzvah is a mitzvah aseh, it's defined as a mitzvah saseh shehazman grama. What?
Because we derive it.
Correct. That's correct. That's correct. So let's just do a quick sample here. One of the great teachers of Tanakh, some say he's the greatest teacher of Tanakh in our generation, Rav Yoel Ben Nun. He wrote an article a couple of months ago stating that he believes in today's times women are obligated to observe a mitzvah saseh, all mitzvot saseh shehazman grama. Because they would tell you that we're not so tied down to our house chores any longer. And, you know, if you ask, he believes if you took a survey of women in this day and age, they would say, why shouldn't I be chayav in mitzvah shehazman my grandma? I come to hear shofar, I take my lulav and esrog, I eat in the sukkah. You know, what's the big deal? You know, and that would have an enormous impact on halacha if that would be indeed true. A lot of halachot would change if that would be the case. But he believes that is, you know, if you were to take a survey, I didn't see anybody raise their hands here. How many? What? Right. Okay, but beyond that,
three times a day with a minyan.
Okay, but that's not an absolute obligation. It's an opportunity, and you would be theoretically chayav, and you could count for the minyan if you chose to abandon mitzvot aseh shehazman grama. That patur, you would count for a minyan. There's no doubt. Tefillin, yeah, exactly. Put on tefillin every day, right? Recite the Shema every day, yeah, 100%. So that's what Tosafot says. And here is the principle. It's identified by Tosafot. He formulated it that whenever the Rabbanan want to put some oomph, some clout into their din de Rabbanan, they will negate the credit that you are deserving mid the oraita, because you didn't follow their instructions. And I'm going to give you, so there are two cases so far. Two cases. One is, according to Rabbi Yehuda, putting a sukkah on an animal. If you sit in a sukkah on an animal, on Chol HaMoed, according to Rabbi Yehuda, you don't get credit for the mitzvah, because the sukkah is not available all 7 days. Who said it's not available? The rabbis. So, but he puts so much clout into that rabbinic edict that it disqualifies, even on a d'oraita level, it's considered you didn't eat in the sukkah. So that's case one. Case two is in case the table is partially inside the house and the lakshin kugel is on that side. You have not fulfilled the mitzvah, even though you sat in the sukkah your entire life. You don't get credit for the mitzvah, because the rabbis are afraid. Yimashech achar shulchano. Yes.
I assume that if there's no sukkah, you're just sitting there on a chair, and if there's no table, thank you, then you're sitting in the sukkah on a chair.
Then it's not a problem. Right. Yes, okay. It's not a problem, because it's not yimashech. You're holding the food in your hand. And that's it. Yes. So I want to give you another case where some other Rishon said what Tosfot says. Another Rishon will say has nothing to do with the Yontif of Sukkos. Turn to page number 25. That's the Yankee second baseman, Gleyber Torres. You got to know these. When he hits a home run, John Sterling says it's Gleyber Day. He's got a rhyme for every home run. Depends who hits it. Yes. Yeah. So, look at the Mishnah. This is the first Mishnah in Shas. First Mishnah, Masechet Brachot. The Mishnah asks, Me'ematai korin et Shema ba'arvin? When can you begin reciting the Shema at night? Answers the Mishnah, I don't want to get involved in the Mishnah, B'sha'a sha'kohanim nichnasun le'achol b'trumasan, when the Kohanim, who are Tameh, suddenly become Tahor and eat their Truma, then you know it's Tseita Kochavim. And here comes the relevant part. Ad Sof HaAshmura HaRishona. Divrei Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer says that each night is divided up into three Ashmorot, three watches in the heavens, in the galaxies, with the angels doing this, doing that. So he believes that until that first Ashmora, so if the night is an average 12 hours, this is 1 till 10 o'clock at night. That's it. If the day, like we do, like we always illustrate, the day starts at 6 a.m., ends at 6 p.m., it's exactly 12 hours, because if you start at any other time, you've got to know calculus in order to figure it out. When is, the first Ashmora? So that's Rabbi Yom. V'chachamim omrim ad chatzot. Chachamim say it's until midnight. Rabbi Gamliel omer ad shiya'ale amud hashachar. Until daybreak. Amud hashachar. That's dawn. Till dawn. Dawn is 72 minutes before sunrise. Before sunrise. Until... that's when you're allowed to read Kriyat Shema Shel Arvis. The Mishnah later on says that in theory, the Chachamim really agree with Rabbi Gamliel's opinion. The Chachamim, who just told us that Kriyat Shema is only until Chatzot, in theory, they really don't believe until Chatzot. That technically the halacha is you're allowed to read Shema until daybreak. Why? Because the pasuk says b'shach b'cha while people are shluffy, and people are shluffy until daybreak. Because when there is daybreak, that's when you can get something done. When it's dark, you can't get anything accomplished. So they would sleep only until daybreak, and then the farmers would start coming out already. So why did they say until chatzot? Because they're afraid that if they're going to allow you to read the Shema until 2 in the morning, you're going to fall asleep, and you'll forget the whole Kriya Shema. You'll sleep past the deadline, and that's it. Past the deadline. In fact, the Mishnah, in the middle of line 2, quotes that famous story of Rabbi Gamliel's children. Ma'aseh uba'u banav mi beit ha-mishteh. His children came home from a wedding celebration. Amru lo, lo karinu et shema. Hey, we were so dancing so much, we forgot to read the Shema. Amar lohem, said Rabbi Gamliel, said to his kiddies, im lo ala amud hashachar, if dawn has not yet been reached, chayavim atem likrot. You are obligated to read. V'lo zu b'lvad omru. Not only this. Ela kol ma shechachamim. She'amru chachamim at chatzot. Whenever the rabbis pipe in and say, you're only allowed to do something until chatzot, mitzvatan achiyala murashacha. The mitzvah is until daybreak. So the Mishnah gives a couple of illustrations. Hekta chalavim ve'ivarim. That is, when you bring a korban, certain parts of the animal have to be burnt on the mizbeach. You're allowed to burn them if the animal was slaughtered and the sprinkled blood on the mizbeach took place before sundown. You're allowed to burn those limbs on the mizbeach all night. All night. But the Chachamim said what? Only until Chatzot. V'chol hane'echalim liyom echad. Any korban that can be eaten only for a day and a night. Such as a korban chagiga. A korban chagiga. A korban toda is only eaten for one day and one night. So the day is the day you slaughter it, and the blood is sprinkled on the Mizbeah. And then it should be the whole next night. But the Chachamim said again, only until midnight. Im kein lama amru Chachamim at chatzot, kidei laharfik adam in aveira. In order to make sure that the Kohen doesn't fall asleep and forget to what? To burn the limbs. Fine. So now, every single Rishon on the planet, except for the one that I'm going to show you, says that when the Chachamim said Ad Chatzot, it's just telling you, get trained to read it before Chatzot. But what happens if you were at a wedding yourself, or at a business meeting, or at the big ball orchard in the South Bronx tonight, watching the Yankees play, and you come home after 12 o'clock, oh yeah, I didn't recite Kriya Shema. I didn't get up at the seventh inning stretch and go to catch my minion at the kosher stand. There's a minion every night for Marv during this seventh inning stretch. So what happens now? So the Rambam writes, of course you can fulfill the mitzvah of Kriya Shema at 2 in the morning. Of course you're allowed to. Everybody says that. Because the Chachamim are only the Chachamim. They can't deny you that according to Torah law, you're allowed to read the Shema until daybreak the next morning. And the Chachamim who said only until Chatzot, that's to get you into a pattern, a habit. Don't wait till 3 in the morning. Try to read it before Chatzot. Except for Talmidei Rabbeinu Yonah. The students of Rabbeinu Yonah who cited their Rebbe, Rabbeinu Yonah. I bracketed the Rabbeinu Yonah for you. V'yesh lahakshot. We can ask the following question. Le Rabbanan, according to the Rabbanan, De Amri, De Afilu Di Eved Eino Yotzei Elo Ad Chatzot, the Rabbanan who say that you have to read the Shema by 12, Im Ovar Chatzot Ma Yehedino. If 12 passed, what is the halacha? She'im no mar shelo yikra klal. If we might suggest it doesn't pay to read it, kasher kevan de kriyat shma chiyuv min haTorah heich yicholim chachamim lipotra mimena. How could the rabbis have exempt you at 12:01 from reading the Shema when according to Torah law it's all night? How could they? So the rest of the answer is, yeah, they have that power. The rest of the Rabbeinu, they have that power. And here Rabbeinu Yonah agrees with the Tosafot and Sukkah that if the rabbis have a legitimate concern to establish something which limits your opportunity based on the biblical law, the rabbis are not only telling you to warn you and to train you, they are threatening you. If you don't read the Shema by midnight, you will get zero credit for the Shema in God's ledger book upstairs. Because the power of the Chachamim is such that they can tell you whether or not you are going to fulfill a mitzvah or not. And he brings one of the following cases. I don't have time to read it now. I'll give you one of the cases. Does the mitzvah of tzitzis override the prohibition of shatnez? Okay. The answer is yes. That's correct. That's the principle we learn. Asay doche lo ta'aseh. Positive commandment overrides a negative. So here is the case. My garment, my four-cornered garment, is made out of linen. Tzitzis have to be made out of wool. So Tosis, the Rabbeinu Yonah quotes, and he's correct. On a d'oraita level, of course you're allowed to wear them. The rabbi said, do not dare put tzitzis on a linen garment. Wear the linen garment without tzitzis. Without tzitzis. Why? Because, said the rabbis, you'll get stuck in the A train. In the A train. You never took the A train? There's one stop from 125th Street to 59th Street. And every time when I came to YU for 6 years, 7 years, whenever I was there, because I didn't dorm, I stayed at home, that A train would take 2.5 hours from 59th Street to 125th Street. And you were standing there like sardines. So if I have my tzitzis on and I'm stuck in the A train and now it gets dark, is there any mitzvah of tzitzis at night? No. So what will I violate if I have my... I violate the law of Shatnez. I'm wearing linen and wool without the protection that there is a mitzvah to wear tzitzis. So the rabbi said, we would rather forego the mitzvah than run the risk that you're going to get stuck in the A train. And they tell you, do not put tzitzis on a four-cornered linen garment. What power the rabbis have. So of course, people say, it's the rabbis telling us what kind of power we have. So of course they're going to push. But that's what happens. So the Rabbeinu Yonah cites that case as another example. Where if the rabbis tell you to do something, you don't do it. And if you decided, that's what the Rabbeinu concludes, if you put on tzitzis on the linen garment, what happens? You don't get credit for wearing tzitzis. Why? Because the rabbi said so. Because I don't want you to put them on. Because in case you're stuck in the A-train, you're going to violate the law of Shatnez, wearing wool and linen, not in a situation of a mitzvah. You're only allowed to wear Shatnez if there is a mitzvah that overrides the law of Shatnez. But at night where there's no mitzvah of tzitzis, all you're doing is wearing wool and linen together and you violate the biblical commandment. So those are two other cases. One, the Rabbeinu Yonah's opinion in relationship to the Shema, and the other one in relationship to Shatnez, where the rabbis have enjoyed the right to supersede a din which the Torah explicitly allows. Yes?
I'm just surprised that the rabbis are still allowing you to wear a four-cornered linen garment in that business. Like, why didn't they... I would have thought they'd say you can wear a four-cornered linen garment.
They could have done that, but they didn't. Because maybe you only had a linen garment. They didn't want you to go without anything. Yes, I hear. I could have heard that as well. You're not allowed to wear a linen garment. End of discussion. But they didn't say that. They didn't say that. They said, wear the linen garment, but don't put tzitzis on it. So you're chayav, because it has four corners, but you're not going to put the tzitzis on, because the rabbi said, don't. And if you do, you won't get credit for the mitzvah anyhow. Which is, again, so what we saw tonight was, we started with a Mishnah in Sukkah. We saw two different cases of a Mishnah in Sukkah, and where the exact same thing is happening, and then we made a transition to Brachot, and then to the comment of Kilayim. And in each case, the principle is identical. There is absolutely nothing wrong according to Torah law. Yet, the rabbis have put a restriction on it, and the rabbis have added, according to Tosfos and the Rabbeinu Yonah, not El Rishonim agree with it, that if you violate our edict, we are going to tell HaKadosh Baruch Hu not to give you credit for the mitzvah under those circumstances.
And this only works when the Torah was a mitzvah saseh?
Usually, where it's a mitzvah saseh. Usually, yes. Yes. Yeah. Almost all of the probably all of them. And yes, yeah, yeah. Because I don't think they could say you don't violate a law.
Right,
by doing, they can never say that. We're allowing you to violate a law. They can't say that.
No.
Right.
There's a limit to the parents.
Yes, yes. All right. We'll stop here, Rabbi.